NSTA reviewer Jacob Blickenstaff digs the 3D reissue of Jurassic Park for lessons on genetics and cloning, examples of how scientists work, ethics, and plain old humanity.
I own an island off the coast of Costa Rica.
I saw Jurassic Park on opening weekend in June of 1993. Jurassic Park 3D was released in celebration of the 20th anniversary of that release. That makes me feel old, but I did enjoy seeing the movie on the big screen again. Details I've missed when watching it on the small screen jumped out at me, and not just because of the 3D effects. Biology teachers could use this re-release of Jurassic Park to introduce DNA, genetic engineering, and evolution, and all science teachers could initiate a discussion of scientific ethics and practices with some carefully selected scenes. I expect that almost everyone knows the basic plot of Jurassic Park and the novel upon which it is based. A wealthy entrepreneur named John Hammond builds a theme park around recreated living dinosaurs his genetic engineers cloned from DNA found preserved in amber. His investors are concerned about safety at the park and demand a site visit by a team of experts. A lawyer representing the investors brings mathematician Ian Malcolm to the park, while Hammond selects paleontologist Alan Grant and paleobotanist Ellie Sattler for the visit. As happens in sci-fi thrillers, things go terribly wrong and several people end up food for the carnivorous dinosaurs. The film spawned two sequels, but neither has become the classic the original is today. One of the most memorable non-scary moments early in the film is the animated lesson on genetics and cloning. There are problems with the science here, but it's a reasonable metaphor to describe DNA as the blueprint for an organism, and insects really have been found trapped in amber. No mosquitoes have been found that are as old as the 100-million-year-old ones shown in the movie, and no DNA has been extracted from these ancient insects. Some scientists have proposed cloning a mammoth from DNA found in carcasses frozen in glaciers for tens of thousands of years, but those two timescales are radically different, and the fact that molecules like DNA degrade over time means that there is little chance of 100-million-year-old DNA being usable. Also near the beginning of the movie, Grant tells a group visiting a dig site that birds are likely the present-day descendants of dinosaurs, noting that both bird and dinosaur bones hold air sacs and hollows. This idea runs counter to early 20th century representations of dinosaurs as cold-blooded, slow-moving, giant lizards. Since the film's release in 1993, additional evidence of the relationship between birds and dinosaurs has been found. A number of dinosaurs had feathers, not just the Archaeopteryx. Dinosaur trackways indicate flocking behaviors, and the idea that most dinosaurs were warm-blooded is now widely accepted. Perhaps every science teacher has heard the question from students, why do we need to learn this? Now, every teacher probably has her favorite answer to that question ready to go when it comes up. One potential answer that teachers may not give very often is, because learning about the world can be a moving experience. I really appreciate that the scientists in Jurassic Park are shown to be emotional about their work. Grant and Sattler both cry at the sight of dinosaurs brought to life, which makes them far more human than most scientists depicted in films and TV. I have written before about the stereotypical representations of scientists as crazed, antisocial white men. Jurassic Park does some work to dispel that misrepresentation. We also see a positive depiction of a female scientist. Ellie Sattler is relentless in looking for what has made a Triceratops ill, even going so far as to reach into a huge pile of dinosaur dung. This is just the sort of commitment to solving a puzzle that scientists need to be successful in their work. On the other hand, the white-coated technicians in the Jurassic Park laboratory display some very poor lab technique. Perhaps one of the first lessons of keeping a lab notebook is to write in pen, non-erasable pen. If a lab notebook is to be considered a complete report of your work, it is unacceptable to erase any of your notes or data. We see Wu, the lead technician, erasing his pencil notations repeatedly during his conversation with both Grant and Sattler. Now, it's possible that this is a conscious choice by the filmmakers to show that Hammond hired unscrupulous scientists to work at the park. Their actions are a good example of what not to do. Before things have a chance to go really, really wrong in the film, Ian Malcolm notes, "Your scientists were so preoccupied with whether or not they could, they didn't stop to think if they should."
Dinosaurs and man, two species separated by 65 million years of evolution. How can we possibly have the slightest idea?
You feel that?
I think this scene would be a great way to kick off a discussion of scientific ethics. What responsibility do scientists have for how their discoveries are used by engineers, doctors, and politicians? I do not claim to have the answer to this question, but I think it is a conversation that more science teachers should have with their students.
For more of Dr. Blickenstaff's reviews, go to the NSTA website and search for Blick on Flicks.
Hold on to your butts.
All major theme parks have problems.
But John, if the Pirates of the Caribbean breaks down, the pirates don't eat the tourists.